You are broken, weighed down with worry and fear. This is the place for you. Not later when you can do more or be more, but today, now. You are joyful, laughing and dancing and shining like the sun. This is the place for you. Not someday when you need help or want to take the time, today, now. You are Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Wiccan, atheist, humanist, confused, seeking. This is the place for you. We extend a special welcome to those who are single, married, divorced, gay, straight, queer, filthy rich, dirt poor, no habla inglés. We extend a special welcome to those who are crying newborns, shouting toddlers, brokenhearted, in need of a safe place, dancing joyfully. This is the place for you if you can sing like Barbara Streisand or if you sound like scraping nails. You're welcome if you're just browsing, if you just woke up, or you just got out of jail. We don't care if you believe in God. We don't care if you've never been to church. This is your place. This is the place for you. We extend a special welcome if you are over 60 but not grown up yet. To teenagers who have grown up too fast, we welcome soccer moms and NASCAR dads, starving artists, tree-hugging hippies, latte sippers, vegetarians, vegans, junk food eaters. We welcome you if you're in recovery. We welcome you if you are still addicted. We welcome you if you had a drink this morning. You are welcome here. We welcome you in the middle of your problems. We welcome you down in the dumps. We welcome you if you hate organized religion, can't stand this word sermon, and don't ever want to meet a minister. We welcome you. We've been there too. If you blew all your offering money at the horse track or the casino, you are welcome here now without it. We offer a special welcome to those who think the earth is flat, work too hard, don't work, can't spell, came because grandma is in town and she wanted to go to church. We welcome those who are inked or pierced or both. This is the place if you could use a prayer right now. This is the place if you had religion shoved down your throat as a kid until you were sick. This is the place if you got lost in traffic and just wound up here by mistake. We welcome tourists, the tragic. We welcome seekers and doubters, bleeding hearts and broken hearts and dancing hearts. Beating hearts are welcome here. We are LCUUC, and this is the place for you. So come, let us worship together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbor.
Meet and merge in communion of heart and soul.
Good job.
Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our first hymn, Number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Welcome again to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Barb Adams, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, friends, and members, wherever they are on life's journey, and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table and find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Like and follow LCUUC on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we care for our community is by contributing to local food pantries, and we do this both financially and by contributing non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. So if you've brought a food item to share, please bring it forward at this point or ask a child to bring it forward. They go in the basket there. And I invite the children to stay up front for a story. And today's story is called Listen to the Wind, the story of Dr. Greg and the Three Cups of Tea. And this is actually based on a true story. You can see all the children here. The story says, we are the children of Corfe. We live in a village in the mountains of Pakistan. Our families grow and gather the food we eat. Our mothers weave and sew the clothes we wear. We make up our games and we make our own toys. We read our books and we write with our pencils. We study in the school that we helped to build. Before our school was built, we had lessons outside. We wrote with sticks on the ground. Can you imagine going to school every day and you get handed your stick and your patch of dirt? No pencils, no pens, no paper. Just, hey, you, that's your dirt. You get to write right there, nowhere else. Can you imagine having to erase it? Wouldn't you look pretty bad by the end of the day? Mm-hmm. That was before a stranger stumbled into our village. He was cold and hungry and sick. We gave him tea and food and a bed near the fire. He told us his name was Greg Mortensen and that he was a nurse. He had come from the United States to climb our mountains, but he had lost his way. As he got stronger, he helped to heal our sick people, and we called him Dr. Greg. Sometimes he sat outside and he helped us with our lessons. He knew that our teacher came 3 times a week, and only 3 times a week, but we still studied every day. This is all the different pictures of them doing their different things, working in the barn and sitting in the hay. When Dr. Greg was well enough to go home, he asked Haji Ali, our wisest man, to help him think of something special he could do for us. Haji Ali answered Dr. Greg with a puzzle. Listen to the wind, he said. Dr. Greg closed his eyes. From above the village, on the high flat ground where we all sat for our lessons, the wind carried our voices down the path. Dr. Greg heard our voices. He felt the wind, and it was cold on his face, and he understood. Corfe needed a school. And Dr. Greg promised to come back and help us to build one. We watched him walk away until he disappeared into the folds of the mountain. 1 year later, we saw a man walking on the path way below our village. It was Dr. Greg. We all ran down to meet him. In Skardu, the nearest big town, he had collected the lumber, cement, and tools that we would need to build the school. But high above the Bredu River, we had only a single cable with a small box that could carry one person. Can you imagine riding on that? It's a wood box hanging from 4 cables. That's how they got across this. Like a zip line, except there's nothing below you and no safety ropes. There was no bridge, and without a bridge, no one could bring the building supplies to us. So everyone worked together to build a bridge from our mountain all the way to the mountain on the other side. Many months later, Dr. Greg and our fathers and friends crossed the strong new bridge carrying the supplies we needed to build the school. They continued to climb until they reached the place where we had piled a mountain of stones cut from our own mountains. Haji Ali marked the exact spot where our school was supposed to stand. Our mothers carried water to mix the cement. The men began to lay the stones for the classrooms. And with our little fingers, we wedged tiny slivers of stone into the cement to make the walls strong. Our school grew each day up from the high, flat ground where we used to write with our sticks. Finally, the men put on the roof. They asked Dr. Greg to hammer in the last nail, and our school was finished. Our imam, Sher Takai, the wise man, the teacher, Hussein, and Dr. Greg, who kept his promise, Julia, the librarian, who brought our books, the craftsmen, the workmen, the porters, the grown-ups, and the children, even the yaks and the goats and the sheep, we all marched together into the school. So they brought in the sheep, they brought in the goats, they brought in the kids. Everybody came in to see what it looked like. Sher Takai blessed the building. And we ran into the school with Hussein, who would now teach us every single day. We are the children of Corfe. We live in a village in the mountains of Pakistan. We write in Urdu and English. We add and subtract. We read our books and we explore our maps, and we are learning in our school that we helped to build. We are the children of Corfe. Can you hear our voices? Listen to the wind. And if you look at these pictures, these are the real people. So this story is not made up. These are the children and the grown-ups.
Why did they used to
want to
go like that?
Yeah, that looks pretty, doesn't it? This is what their building looked like when it was done. They built that all with their own hands, the kids too. So thank you for listening to my story today. And if I could have my lantern bearer. Miss Barb's going to get our lantern. May the light and love of our lantern lead you today and every day. The children are having joint RE today, so if you're wondering where your child has gone, they're all out in joint RE. And I'd like to ask that you help me sing the children out. The song's called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service. Being a member of a UU community is never dull. A visitor to a Unitarian Universalist church sat through the sermon with growing incredulity at the heretical ideas being spouted. And after the sermon, a UU who was a member asked the visitor, "So how'd you like it?" And the visitor said, "I cannot believe half the things the minister said. They were sputtering." "Oh, good," said the UU, "you'll fit right in with all the rest of us." Some other lovely quotes here. "A Unitarian very earnestly disbelieves in almost anything anyone else believes, and he has a very lively, sustaining faith, and he doesn't know quite what." That's Somerset Maugham. Garrison Keillor said, "Unitarians don't want salvation, they want closure." I must say right now that I don't want closure, I want opening, more specifically the opening of your wallets. So the morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. And we do this in two ways. Before the service, you can always come up silently and light a candle here on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud and we light candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
My name is Jim. I'd like to light a candle of joy because I just heard that Brother Gus will be rejoining our congregation. Yeah.
My name is Carol, a joy. My son Aaron is joining me today, a sorrow. He leaves in a week to go to college. For all the parents and kids returning to college, have a good year.
This is Esther. I'm the person who sells coffee and from Equal Exchange and to all of you. And anyway, I found out this week that a couple of statistics from Equal Exchange that out of all of the Unitarian churches in Wisconsin, we are fourth in sales. And out of the whole country of Unitarian churches, we are 30th.
That is a joy.
I think that's pretty good. I'm not wondering who the other three in Wisconsin are. It's probably Madison and West. And
my name is Claire, a candle of concern for the Wickman family. They were on vacation, and I was their pet sitter, and unfortunately their cat had to be put to sleep while they were away.
This is Chris, a candle of joy for the Friday evening new member potluck bonfire. We had quite a good group, and s'mores out at the bonfire. It was just a great evening. It was a great kickoff to our new year.
My name is Marie, and hello. My name is Marie, and I would like to light a candle of joy for all the wonderful people in this church who have helped me through some difficult times. Thank you all.
I'm Sarah Hudson, and I'd like to light a candle of joy for the people of this church who have put black into the banner and have understanding of both sides of the issue, probably, hopefully. I'm really glad that black is in the banner.
I'm Al, and I want to add on to the Black Lives. I guess the new sign reads, Still Matter. So a candle of resiliency, a candle of hope that we all can not just be radically welcoming, but be radically accepting.
Hi, this is Kaz. I have joy and sorrow. My mother, who was 91 years old, was suffering from Alzheimer's for a few years. And the last year, I went home to Japan and see her to so that she would get to know, you know, still recognize me. And she gave me a most wonderful smile, and she tried to talk to me, and she couldn't because she had stroke. And she passed away 2 days ago. Whoop! And she actually was just eating dinner and threw up, and then her heart stopped. And that's how she moved on to the other side. That's what we call it in Japan. And my mother, who spent her life during World War II, didn't have a lot of food to eat in Japan and had to dig potato roots, not the potato, but potato roots in the farm after they have harvested potato so they could have something to eat. Well, this woman, 91 years old, last thing she did was to eat. And she died, you know, peacefully, and just what a wonderful life she had.
Hi, my name's Tony. A candle of joy and also concern for a dear friend of mine who had the brain surgery and has finished the radiation, and when he's strong enough, they will be doing the chemo. And
my name is Robin, and I'd like to like a candle for my sister, and she's we're the last of our generation together, and she's a wonderful woman who is I can't say how much I love her.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we have not named aloud here today.
This reading is excerpts from Community, The Structure of Longing by Peter Block. Community occurs in part as a shift in context, the mental models we bring to our collective efforts. Context is the set of beliefs at times that we are unaware of that dictate how we think, how we frame the world, what we pay attention to, and consequently how we behave. It is sometimes called a worldview. The following are the shift in context that would signal a transformation into authentic community. We are a community of possibilities, not a community of problems. Community exists for the sake of belonging and takes its identity from the gifts, generosity, and accountability of all of its citizens. It is not defined by its fears, its isolation, or its penchant for retribution. We currently have all the capacity, expertise, programs, leaders, regulations, and wealth required to end unnecessary suffering and create an alternative future. The overriding characteristic of the stuck community is the decision to broadcast all the reasons we have to be afraid. This is a kind of advertising that exploits the fear we have of violence, of the urban core, of terrorism, of African Americans and other groups, of immigrants, of those who are poor or undereducated, of other religions, and of other countries. The marketing of fear is not just for profit. It also holds a political agenda. Fear justifies the retributive agenda, fundamentalist in the extreme, that has been on the rise for some time. The effect of buying into a fascination with strong leaders is that it lets its citizens off the hook and breeds citizen dependency and entitlement. It undermines a culture where each is accountable for their community. The attention on the leader makes good copy. It gives us someone to blame and thereby declares our innocence, but does not contribute to building community. In its own way, it reinforces individualism, putting us in the stance of waiting for the cream to rise, wishing for a great individual to bring light where there was darkness. Restoration begins when we think of community as a possibility, a declaration of the future that we can choose to live into. The communal possibility rotates on the question, what can we create together? This emerges from the social space we create when we are together. To continue as a community, to focus on the needs and deficiencies of the most vulnerable, is not an act of hospitality. It substitutes labeling for welcoming. It is isolating in that they become a special category of people defined by what they cannot do. This isolates the most vulnerable. Despite our care for them, we do not welcome them into our midst. We service them. They become objects. This may be why it is easier to raise money for suffering in distant places or to celebrate the history of slavery's end than it is to raise money for our neighbors on the margin who are six blocks away. Their proximity stands in the way of our compassion. Restoration and reconciliation begin the moment we take back our projection and reduce the labeling in the name of service. Communal transformation, taking back our collective projections, occurs when people get connected to those who were previously strangers and when we invite people into conversations that ask them to act as creators or owners of the community. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
A reading from Radical Hospitality, Benedict's Way of Love, by Father Daniel Holman and Lonnie Gollins-Pratt. When we speak of hospitality, we are always addressing issues of inclusion and exclusion. Each of us makes choices about who will and who will not be included in our lives. Issues of inclusion and exclusion, while personal, are not just personal. Our entire culture excludes many people. If you are in a wheelchair, for example, you are excluded because there are places you can't go. If you are very young, if you are very old, you are excluded. Hospitality has an inescapable moral dimension to it. It is an issue involving what it means to be human. All of our talk about hospitable openness doesn't mean anything as long as some people continue to be tossed aside. But calling hospitality a moral issue does not tell us the whole truth about hospitality either. A moral issue can become bogged down in legalisms, and hospitality is no legalistic ethical issue. It is instead a spiritual practice, a way of becoming more human. A way of understanding yourself. Hospitality is both the answer to modern alienation and injustice and a path to deeper spirituality. The phrase radical hospitality refers to the activities and desires that inspire individuals and communities to welcome those who are unlike themselves. Rather than viewing any person in terms of how they benefit us, radical hospitality means accepting the person with no thought of personal benefit. Instead of seeking persons who will support the congregation, actively seek persons who need the support of the congregation. To become hospitable means finding ways to welcome the marginalized, forgotten, and misunderstood among us. As a church, we have become accustomed to viewing our membership in terms of what others can give to the local congregation. We actively seek out productive, contributive members of our community. But radical hospitality calls us to search for the lost ones, those who have nothing to give us, but who instead need something from us. They may or may not be aware of what they have to give in return. Radical hospitality does not keep a ledger of what is given and what is received. What matters is that we stretch our hearts open and draw near to each other. It is the way of hospitality, the way of life, and it is the only way home. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in number 298 in the gray hymnal, Wake Now My Senses.
I want to go home. Can't we go home yet? I want to go home. You ever heard a little one say this on the playground? Tired and cranky, maybe a little hungry, maybe trying not to cry. I want to go home. You may have heard your own kids. You may have said it or some version of it. And what it means is I'm done for right now. I'm done. I want to be somewhere safe. I want to be comfortable. Maybe it means I want to put my pajamas on and get my favorite blanket. I want to be where I am loved. I want to be where I am wanted. I'm done with the struggle for today. There are all kinds of versions of this phrase because where you live may not be where you go to feel safe and welcome. But the feeling is the same. Everyone wants to go to a place where their welcome and safety are assured. A cosmic version of Cheers. Somewhere where everyone knows your name and they're glad to see you. A place where you belong, even on a bad day. Even when you bring nothing to the table. Even when you come needing rather than giving. And this leads us to the idea of radical welcome and radical hospitality. Simple welcoming, simple hospitality are things that most of us do pretty darn well. When we invite someone to dinner at our house and we tell them, make yourself at home. Sit down, relax. There's the bathroom, there's the refrigerator. We mean it. We want them to be comfortable, but there are limits, right? I can come into your house, I can take my shoes off, I can get my own coffee. I've done it for a bunch of you. But when I start rearranging the furniture and painting the walls my favorite shade of black, you're going to put me out the front door. Because it goes beyond hospitality to do something like that. When we invite someone to make themselves at home in our home, we're inviting them to enjoy our things, even to use or consume them, up to some kind of culturally understood point. And each culture is different, so we have screw-ups all the time with how this works. So an acquaintance borrows my lawnmower and brings it back, and they fill it with gas, and they actually clean it up. They don't know me that well, so they take great care. A friend borrows the same lawnmower and returns it clean, but doesn't bother about the gas because tomorrow they'll pay for all the kids to have ice cream, and it all comes out the same, but they're still keeping track. My best friend steals my lawnmower and my weed whacker without asking and then comes back and mows my grass. And nobody remembers who bought the gas last because the stuff goes back and forth and back and forth. And it's mine and yours and ours and who cares anyway, I'll steal it back next week. But none of them sell that lawnmower because it isn't theirs. They don't feel an ownership, no matter how close. When a church does nothing more than offer simple welcome, simple hospitality, they say to people, we're glad you like our stuff. We're glad you're like us. And if you stay long enough, you'll become one of us. Have some coffee. But we're called to do more than offer our guests a chance to have a seat and a cookie. Because it's our cookie. We're called to do more than that. In the reading that Barbara did this morning, it defined radical hospitality, the activities and desires that inspire individuals and communities to welcome those unlike themselves. To say to the black community, black lives matter, you are welcome. And to mean that from the depths of your soul. Radical hospitality means accepting the person with no thought of benefit. To become hospitable means finding ways to welcome the marginalized, the forgotten, the misunderstood. In addition to our fears, we've become a culture with more disdain and indifference than ever before. We hold our phones in front of us. We hold our tablets and our computers, reality TV. That's become what's real. Regardless of where our search may take us, it begins for all with a turning inside and a ruthless self-evaluation. According to Pratt, an examination of conscience that scorches away the excuses we grant ourselves is not just needed. Our lives and our society may depend on it. Radical welcome begins with our Unitarian Universalist principle of interconnectedness. It says, I'm not welcoming you into my home. I'm welcoming you home. I'm not holding the door and asking you to come into my place. Because I am here, because you are here, you already have a place. To borrow a line from the Gospel of the Christian New Testament, I have gone ahead and made a way for you. This is a radical call. This is not a call for some type of genteel niceness. This is a call to justice at the deepest level. Because I have a place, because there is a place, you have a place. You don't have to apply. You don't have to be good enough or smart enough or rich enough. You don't have to be popular enough. You are enough by the fact that you are. There are no qualifiers, and this can be frightening. This is religion, this is church at its absolute rawest, its fiercest, and its boldest. This is what we are called to do. The poet Rumi says, this being human is a guest house. Every morning is a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. They may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. As a human being, this is a central task. To learn to accept each emotion, each experience of your life as valid and important. To not be afraid. The good, the bad, the painful all shape you and make you and teach you. Well, we don't want to suffer. No one wants to suffer. But a life without some depth and balance becomes meaningless. With no pain and no sorrow, there is no way to understand joy. With no sadness, there is no lens to truly appreciate the stunning beauty and fragility of your life. But on a greater scale, this poem becomes a metaphor for why we need to welcome the stranger joyfully and without reservation. Each one brings a new piece. Each one guides us and shapes us and brings depth to our experience. Each one is already a part of us. They are merely a part we have not yet explored. Radical welcome begins with this radical inclusion. There are no prerequisites. You are a newcomer, not a visitor. From the moment you were born, your path began turning here, and now you are home. You may leave again today and never return. But it remains your possession to use or sell or give away to love or hate. You don't have to earn it. It is earned by your blood, by your breath. Giving and receiving form the next layer of radical welcome, and they are perfectly balanced. We have stewardship in churches, and we talk a lot about giving, generosity, generous giving. We don't have receiving week. This is a weird idea, but we should. It's equally important. As a member of the church, you're called to give from your heart and equally to ask for what you need to support your search for truth and meaning, and both are equally valid. Both are unconditional. And this is hard because it doesn't fit the idea of successful American life. We're all supposed to get it right all the time, right? We're all supposed to try for the place where we can give and give and give. We never need to take. That's for takers. That's for people who need things. None of y'all need things, right? Y'all pretty independent? Mega churches and televangelists get on TV and they preach prosperity gospel. And if you've never seen Robert Tilton or Joel Osteen, I do recommend watching at least once to feel for what this is. They tell their viewers that if you want to belong, you have to send as much money as you can. Seed money. And the more money you give, the more money God will take and the more God will bless you. You didn't know that, did you? It's prosperity gospel. I would say to you today that from my perspective, prosperity gospel is a lie. It doesn't work that way. It is an unbalanced, power disparate system that destroys people. A scheme designed to get money from people who just want to go home, who just want to be loved. We are not selling religion. We are not selling welcome. Givers are a blessing. They're gifts of money and talent. Let us pay the bills and to know the joy of having things. Absolutely. And receivers are also a blessing. Those who come needing, they let us have that joy and blessing of giving. It has value, deep, meaningful value. Radical welcome is about recognizing this value, recognizing our experience together as participatory. This is not a commercial transaction. This is not consumption. We're in this together, not sales. We are called as a church to cultivate personal autonomy, to recognize in each person the right to determine if this is the place for them, but the default setting is inclusion. No one has to wait for some conjunction of circumstances to be okay. No baptism, no confirmation. You don't have to be saved or born again to be fixed enough to be welcome. You don't have to accept some specific truth or reject some other. We're in this experience of life together. We are a church together. And as I was working on this sermon, I was looking at various pieces about what it means to belong and to be. And I found a marvelous piece by Anne Lamott, which some of you may have seen because I shared it on Facebook. It was so simple and so perfect. And I want to share part of it here. She said, when people say stupid stuff to someone I love who's really going through it, I hear rage. When someone says let go and let God with certainty and good cheer, I know they secretly want to get their gun and stroll through the neighborhood. What a horrible thing to say when someone is half mad with grief or fear. I say to the recipient, that is complete BS, and you must promise me you will avoid that person like the plague for the foreseeable future, because they're a danger to your spirit. The truth is, everyone worth his or her salt, all the very best people, feel broken, stunned, overwhelmed, and defective some of the time. When people don't, when they're very pleased with their personal upbeat selves and their all-encompassing worldview, like, say, the Duggar family, we want to run screaming for our cute lives, and we absolutely don't want to sit near them at dinner. So what do I want to hear at a gathering like church? I want to hear, me too. Me too. I have that too. I know what that feels like. Gandhi and Jesus knew what it feels like, the loneliness, the sadness, the brutality. Jesus often said, it's hard here. How are you doing? Have you eaten? There's some loaves. There's some fish. Here's some wine. Go sit over there. Eat. Eat, take a breath. We'll get back to this. Go to the beach, have some fish. We'll talk later. I want to hear a church, wow, thank you for trusting me with that. What a big drag. I've been through it too. Let's file a complaint with the complaints department. Come on, we'll sit down and plan our strategy. I want someone to say that against all odds, there's a solution. There absolutely is, and it's not out there somewhere in a circumstance. Circumstances don't need to change to feel peace again. or even happiness. As Lily Tomlin said, the problem with winning at the rat race is you're still a rat. The solution is knowing the truth. The solution is spiritual. I want to hear someone remind me that if I want to have loving feelings, I need to do loving things. She said, I want someone to make me laugh about our shared humanity and cuckoo-ness. I want someone to remind me that laughter is carbonated holiness. I want someone to make me a promise that I'll get outside. I want someone to remind me of what Ram Dass said, that we're all just walking each other home. I want to hear that big fat cherries are on sale for $4.99 at most stores and that peach season has begun. I want to hear that I'm loved and welcome, no matter what a mess I've made of things or how defective I feel. I want to hear it'll get better. Maybe not tomorrow or right after lunch. I want to hear that you and God will never leave me. That I'm not nuts. That I'm not nuts for finding life as a mixed grill. That it can be hard and magical, brutal and gorgeous, unfair, hilarious, sweet, wild and mysterious. All at once. She said, that's what I need to hear today. And that's what I'm going to say today in spite of all. So thank you and thank you and thank you. And this is the core of radical welcome. Me too. Me too. I'm here. I see you. I hear you. You don't need to be fixed. I see you as you are. And I'm broken too. We all laugh and we all hurt and we all just want to go home sometimes. We all just need a hug some days. Straight and queer and black and white, people of color, Caucasian people, able-bodied people, handicapped people, deaf people. We're all just walking each other home. And you know what? You are not alone. You're not the only one. We're here. Enter, rejoice, and come in. Welcome home. Amen.
Please rise, embody your spirit, and join in singing number 298, Wake Now My Senses.
No.
No, wrong one, Barb. I'm sorry. Okay, how about 1021 in the green hymnals? How does that sound? Lean on Me.
And I think Tracy has some directions for us.
I have a little bit of directions. This is one of these long ones where I have to copy the second set of pages so I don't have to turn. So this piece has three verses. We start at the beginning and go to the third page at the end of the second line and go back to the beginning again. You do that three times, and then you finish off at the very end. But because the ending is a little empty, we all want to go back and sing the chorus again. The chorus starts on the top of the second page with Lean on Me When You're Not Strong. So I'm going to start playing that first. If you want to join me, you can, but then we'll come back to the beginning of the song and start there. That doesn't make sense.
We're in trouble now, sweetheart.
Thank you.
church is not a building or a place. It is who you are. It is beloved community you build. Be that beloved community no matter where you are or who stands beside you. Peace, and may it be so.